Greetings, everyone. It is now time for Marked Safe. Tales of your very favorite and most beloved disasters. On Marked Safe, we discuss events and details that some may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Please listen responsibly and stay safe. And now, here with your hosts, Brianne and Melanie, this is Marked Safe.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, bestie.
What you doing?
Well, laundry, and I've made an executive decision that I feel like two closed doors will be adequate for sound muffling. I typically turn it off. This time I decided it'll probably be fine, and I have a lot of laundry to do today. If it's not fine and you hear my washer and dryer, I'm sorry.
After the shit show between my washer and dryer replacement recently, listen, you'll never hear me complaining about laundry anytime soon.
Well, rumor has it a lot of other people do listen to these conversations. I've heard. I don't know. So we asked for disaster relief from you guys last week, and you definitely came through.
Yes, thank you.
So, yeah, we're going to pick up part two of this incredibly difficult story. But at the end of it, we will have quite a bit of disaster relief. I can't imagine many people are coming into this on part two. But just in case, I want to put out a blanket warning. Don't start with this one, first of all, because it won't make sense. But, all the content warnings are in the first episode, but just like that one, this one is going to be very, very heavily, centered on suicide and suicidal ideation and thought processes leading up to that, impact on the family, all that really, really hard stuff. So, disaster relief or not, if you are not in a place to hear it, please don't listen. And I will put a marker in the show notes for where the disaster relief is, because since it's a collaborative effort, you may want to hear that, even if you aren't up for the story. Yeah. So I will put a marker in the show notes for when that begins.
Perfect. You're the best.
No, I try. Well, top 8 billion.
Top 8 billion. I'm still under the weather, so pardon my voice this week, guys. Should we jump into the bracket, though?
Yeah.
This one's probably my favorite matchup ever.
Oh, God. Okay, no pressure. Tell me. I didn't look, which isn't good because maybe I haven't eaten them. I kind of forgot to.
This is definitely a very Melanie matching. This week, it's fried bologna sandwiches.
Okay.
Versus fried spam sandwiches.
Oh, bologna. Bologna. Easy peasy. I don't need to try spam. I wouldn't have tried spam even if I'd looked in time. It's just, I've gone 36 years and I don't want to break my streak now.
Okay, like, you know, this is disappointing.
Yeah, like a 36-year snap streak, a 36-year Wordle streak. Do you want to have a 36-year mouth free of spam streak and break it?
Yes.
I don't.
Spam is the most glorious thing in the whole entire world. I own Spam Yahtzee. My friend bought it for me. That's how much I love Spam.
Jesus. Well,
it's in my board game collection.
I would love to meet your board game collection sometime.
It's pretty good. I like it. We're on this new triple threat Uno thing. It's really fun.
I need board game recommendations from you. Anyway, I'm not planning to start putting that in my mouth, and you really won't see me beating down the door of the fried bologna sandwich man either, but I could fuck with fried bologna sandwich like twice a decade and it wouldn't be bad.
It's the nostalgia for me. I love them both equally.
I didn't eat either growing up, but my mom ate fried bologna growing up. So I guess there's like a little bit of at least scent nostalgia, although I didn't eat it. But definitely if the two were in front of me, there would not be a question. And it's so stupid. And I will call myself out because the contents of bologna are one iota less sus than the contents of spam. And I know that.
I just love like when you fry bologna and it gets that little bubble, the little bologna belly in it.
Yeah. You know, maybe this is my decade time, actually. You know what? I will have a fried bologna sandwich over the summer because I'll have my kid home, and recently through some godforsaken witchcraft. She has gotten to be fond of bologna sandwiches. I don't know where she got that from. Not me. But I'm sure she's going to want some this summer. So maybe I will
fry it up.
Make a fried one. Who knows?
Fry it up. All right. Bologna wins.
All right. Well, that was a little too quick.
That's bologna.
That is bologna, because I don't want to talk about this.
You did this. You did this. Oh, actually, Riley did
Riley
this.
Riley did this. And it turns out it's actually Riley's wife who is very interested in Christine's story, although I have joined her there. Yeah. I don't know. There are some stories that just grab you and don't let go. And it's putting it mildly to say that that was one for me. So let's bring ourselves back up to speed with where we were at. We've got Christine. Also, I did not write this into my script, I don't think, but she has one of the most fascinating charts, like astrological charts, I've ever looked at in my life.
Oh, so really?
Remind me at the end before we do disaster relief for the four people who might be interested to talk about that, because it is nutsy bobo, dude.
Cool.
I don't mean nutsy bobo like she's nutsy bobo. I mean it's nutsy bobo how specific it is. You'll see what I mean. Okay. So we've got Christine and we've got her brothers, Tim and Greg, and her mom, Peg. And, you know, they kind of live together in this large, bougie oceanfront house in Siesta Key. Just whoever needs to be there at the time kind of is there. It's like a grown-up roommate situation. Christine is working at the news station, very much butting heads with her boss, Mike, because he is all about this blood and guts reporting, and she is sort of protesting that. She is very, very against that, very concerned with journalistic integrity, very concerned with victim-focused stories, not trying to be a vulture in the Nikki way.
Yeah, she doesn't. It's not like a shock jock situation.
No, not at all. But their ratings suck, and Mike would like for it to be. So when we left off, Christine had asked Mike for permission to do a segment on suicide, and she had started researching that and made contact with the Sarasota Police Department, and they had given her entirely too much advice on how a person would do it if a person were to do it. And she had gone ahead and bought the weapon and bullets that they had, I don't want to say recommended, but
right.
Described for sure. And then on Friday, she threw a party for like 30 people at her family's house. And big wigs from the station came, coworkers came. Everybody said it was a different side of Christine. In reality, that was not it. In reality, Christine was resolved and up, and nobody was seeing that. So that brings us to Saturday. And on Saturday, Greg and his fiance, that's her brother, came over to use the washing machine. He had lived there for a while, but he got engaged and moved out. And then Tim got mono and moved in his place.
He got mono and moved in.
Yeah, which felt, because I had mono a couple years ago, and yeah, I can see that.
You just don't want to be alone.
You can't
move. Really be alone. I mean, yeah.
No, it's so bad. Bless Sandwich Daddy's heart for nursing me through mono.
I remember that.
Oh, we don't give her enough credit for that. So when Greg and his fiance came over, Christine told him something that she had told him many times before. She was struggling really badly with depression, and she was thinking about ending her life. Now, this is something that I think we have to slow down and unpack, because there's a very obvious knee-jerk reaction. It's just, it's so easy, it's so reassuring to be able to say, she told you, she laid it out for you, she reached out, why didn't you do something? But I know for a fact there are a lot of people who are going to hear that and feel sick to their stomachs. Not in Christine's family, but our actual listeners, because there are people listening right now who live with somebody who has experienced mental illness for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And it's shared and private at the same time, because for all the parties and dates and career wins and seeing her in a different light and turning over a new leaf, nobody really understood what it was like for Christine inside her brain. At the same time, energy is real, energy shared, and sharing intimate space with someone who is profoundly struggling when you yourself aren't is very hard.
It's difficult for sure.
It is. More than one thing can be true. And I understand that it does become impossible to react to every crisis level statement with the full urgency it deserves sometimes when the crisis is uninterrupted. And some people have to live with this baseline reality of feeling like they don't want to be alive. And some people also have to live with hearing those statements from their loved one monthly or weekly or daily for years and still having to do the laundry and grocery shop. You do have to learn how to triage based, you don't, I mean, have to may be the wrong word, but you end up learning to triage based on how much emotional distress seems present at the time, how much support they have, how serious they seem. You know, somebody says something like that, hear it once, it's a reason to get in the car and go to the hospital. When that's their baseline, it's harder. Sometimes you triage wrong. And I'd rather say too much about that than too little. Because I know that for every person who might be listening who's dealing with suicidal ideation or depression or mental illness themselves, there's also somebody who is in a very close, intimate support role, and they're both hard.
It affects everybody.
They both need to be talked about. The experiences of mental illness and close and prolonged contact with mental illness in a very close loved one, two completely different agonies. And obviously, it doesn't mean that you don't be there for people, because we have to, we need to. But you understand that if you're in that situation, you got to take some precautions for your own mental health too. You know, if you work in a COVID wing, you wear PPE to work. You don't stop showing up. You don't abandon your patients. Right. As a patient, you don't stay home and protect the hospital staff either. You wear your PPE so you can be there. Because you got to be, you need to be, you should be, you want to be. We need each other. But understanding the energy shared, taking care of yourself, is wearing your PPE. And I am not willing to judge her family for failing to intervene that Saturday out of respect for that, because I've been on the other side of it. You know, I've been somebody struggling and I've been living with somebody struggling, and they're both very hard. So I can't let that stand with any kind of, I know people hear that part of the story and they're just like, wow, she reached out for help and you didn't do anything. And
yeah.
Can't do that.
Hindsight's 2020.
It is. But I mean, I think that there's a point when you have lived with somebody who is in serious crisis for a long time, where even in hindsight, you know that what what you should have done at that time, but it's hard. And I just don't want to minimize that. I don't want to discount that. So when Christine told Greg that she was thinking about ending her life, he asked if she wanted to talk about it. And she said no, but they could talk about it tomorrow. And it seemed to Greg that it was a good sign if she wanted to discuss it. It meant she was struggling with the desire to follow through, but she was willing and able to try to use resources to overcome that. On Saturday, she didn't even seem that upset. Her mood seemed better than usual. She'd baked a cake. She had a tan. Greg and Christine's brother, Tim, agreed that he would have handled it the same way if he'd been the one to have the conversation. Because the fear of Christine's possible death was just, it was impossible for her family not to grapple with. It was so present. And they almost seemed to view it like a terminal illness with an unknown life expectancy. And it wasn't that they thought she was being dramatic or seeking attention. It was that they understood that she was quite serious, and they had limited means of truly stopping it forever. Tim said it was a recurrent conversation. In times of real doubtness, it seemed to her a real solution for escape. We gave it credibility.
And with the resources back then, too, I mean, it sounds like what they did was pretty incredible.
I mean, they had spent about $1 million trying to help.
Yeah.
He said they regularly talked together and processed the fact that this was something that always seemed to be on the table for Chris. Her mom said, you know, she's always talked about it. If life gets too tough, I'll get out. If I can't handle it, I'll leave. It was her decision, and she decided that it was all just too much for her. Whether anybody else thought it wasn't, well, it was. We thought it was possible because there wasn't anything in her life. If somebody asked me a few weeks ago if it was possible, I would have said yes. For her, it was the only way out.
That's really sad.
It is really sad.
It's honest.
It is. I do feel like sometimes sort of the way her mom talks about her, though, it makes you sort of wonder what the dynamic was between them. I don't know. That's not my place to even comment on. But
like a misunderstanding?
There's a statement later that just file that sort of in your head. Her mom gives a statement later that's just a very interesting statement. We'll revisit that. So that was Saturday. On Sunday, Christine had dinner with her mom and her brother. Greg said that she seemed to have, quote, an uncomfortable calm about her and to be more resolved than she usually was about everything. She put on a puppet show for her brother's daughter. On Monday, July 15th, 1974, Chris had coffee with her mom in the morning, and then she went in to work at 9:30 a.m., which was half an hour early. According to the news director, she was in the best mood he had ever seen her in. She was dressed very sharply in a black and white print dress, and she had a guest this morning, but he was at the studio with his wife, and Christine sent them to sit down and wait for her. So she switched some stuff up that morning. She asked that her broadcast be recorded. They weren't always or even usually because the tapes were really expensive, but nobody questioned it. She made a call to switch up the order that she planned to cover things, deviating from the plan to lead with an interview, as was her norm, saying that she was going to open with a report on a local shooting instead. The thing was, like, what her segment, it wasn't a newscast. It was like a local interest segment.
Right.
She had anchored newscasts before, but she'd never opened the Suncoast Digest with one. It wasn't the format. But despite her eccentricities, she was very well respected as a professional, and she seemed to be in a great mood, so nobody really questioned it. Christine set her brown puppet bag by her chair under her desk. Broadcast started normally, aside from the switched up order, and for 8 minutes, she covered three national stories. And then there was a short technical error, which led to a brief pause. And I wonder if the little hiccup made people pay attention to their sets when they wouldn't have.
Right.
Like, I always look over when something seems off script. It catches your ear if there's an error or a mistake. But it might not have, because she was such a professional, she just rolled with it. Her coworker, Jean, said, "Chris, the film's not going to roll." Chris shrugged and continued. She never broke her news anchor voice. She just said, "Sorry, for those of you who saw Late Night over the weekend with Newswatch last night, we did have a film report and commentary by Bob Peterson, but unfortunately we had technical difficulties and cannot bring it to you now." So, I don't know. Maybe people did catch that something was off. Maybe not. This next part is from a long-form article written for the Washington Post shortly after Christine's death. It is the only source that I've found that describes the small movements and emotions that the viewers watched, and it does so very well. So I'm going to read the description from the article to you. Before I get into this, content warnings. I know, yeah. I have said it so many times, it's annoying at this point, but this is the part. Be careful. Turn it off if you need to. Quote, "Christine Chubbuck flicked her long dark hair back away from her face, swallowed, twitched her lips only slightly, and reached with her left hand to turn the next page of her script. Looking down on the anchor desk, she began to read. In keeping with Channel 40's policy of bringing you the latest in," she looked up from the script, directly into the camera, and smiled a tentative smile. Her voice took on a sarcastic tone as she emphasized, "blood and guts, and in living color." She looked back down at her script. Her left hand shook almost unnoticeably. Her right arm stiffened. "We bring you another first." Her voice was steady. She looked up again into the camera. Her eyes were dark, direct, and challenging. An attempted suicide. Her right hand came up from under the anchor desk. In it was a .38 caliber revolver. She pointed it at the lower back of her head and pulled the trigger.
She say attempted?
She did.
Wow.
Everybody watched. What else could they do? Her boss thought it was a prank. until her body slumped forward and then out of her chair. And the technical director changed the screen to black. Viewers immediately flooded the station and 911 dispatch with calls. When they went on set to attempt resuscitation, one of her colleagues found a paper on the desk soaked in blood. It was the news segment that Christine had sat down and written before filming, longhand and in the third person. Before taping was, it was about her death, the segment she'd written. It opened, "Today Chris Chubbuck shot herself during a live broadcast." It said she was transported to the hospital and listed in critical condition. The script didn't say if she died, and between that and referring to it as a suicide attempt, her family and colleagues agreed that this was because she was simply too precise to speculate that firmly. She could only say what she knew was about to happen.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. She also did leave a suicide note in the station, which said she wanted everyone to see the broadcast. Christine was taken to the hospital and listed in critical condition in keeping with her report. So, back to her mom for a moment. Her mom was interviewed while Christine was in the hospital, still alive. Now, I would assume the prognosis had to have been terrible, grave, at the point that this interview was given. But she was still alive.
Yeah.
She said, quote, "She was terribly, terribly, terribly depressed. She had a job that she loved. She said constantly that if it ended tomorrow, she would still be glad she had had it. But she had nothing else in her social life. No close friends, no romantic attachments or prospects of any kind. She was a spinster at 29, and it bothered her. She couldn't register with people. That's the main thing. She'd been very depressed. She'd been seeing a psychiatrist who really didn't feel like she was that serious about not wanting to live. She felt like if you've tried as hard as you can, you've prepared yourself, you work hard, you reach your hand out to people and nobody takes it, then there's something wrong with your drumbeat. And she really felt that she couldn't register with anyone except her family. And at 29, that's sad." End quote.
Very dismissive.
It is an interesting report to give, or an interesting statement to give.
While your daughter's still alive.
Is inside on life support. Yeah. I don't... What if she lived? And she wakes up and in the newspapers hears her mom saying she's very, very, very depressed and a spinster at 29 and couldn't register with people.
I mean...
Fuck.
It's definitely not helping with the way you feel about yourself.
That is kind
of... If that's what she's struggling with, you know what?
Right. And I can't emphasize enough that, I mean, this woman... It's her daughter, no matter how problematic or weird their relationship could possibly have been. And I don't even know that it was, but what, regardless, I'm sure she loved her daughter and this just happened. Like, I don't want to dismiss that at all. I just feel like it comes off a little critical, almost.
Comes off very critical. I'll say it.
Yeah. And it's also every word of it's past tense, which I know, you know, at that point, maybe you've just kind of.
Has she already grieved the loss of her daughter?
Exactly. Like, she knows this is coming one way or another, and here it is. Or maybe the prognosis was just so unimaginably bad that it was just considered a very minimal life extending life support. I don't know. Like, I don't know.
From an outsider's perspective, it's rough.
The combination of that and then the other statement she gave about how she was so depressed and she just, I don't know. They had the same odd tone to me. And
I think odd is a good descriptor for that.
There but for the grace of God go I. And I am lucky to not know exactly how I would react in that situation. And I hope I never find out. So I'm not trying to be a piece of shit here, but that statement landed strangely to me. At 7 p.m., the family was informed that Christine was unlikely to survive the night, and she died at 11:15 p.m., almost 15 hours after the shot was fired. She was the first, but technically not the last, person to die by suicide on live television. There have been, just as a little sidebar here, there have been a handful of There's a list on Wikipedia. It's called film suicides or televised suicides or something like that. Basically, for one reason or another, it was filmed. It's fewer than you would think. Like, a lot fewer than you would think. But also, if I whittle down the criteria to basically somebody who was in front of a camera because that was a part of their job or their life, they were supposed to be in front of a camera. It wasn't, you know, like somebody setting themselves on fire in protest of a war or something, that kind of thing. You're in front of a camera because that's where you're supposed to be. And you died in the process. I can only find one other, which is our Bud Dwyer. And that's another rabbit hole to fall down for sure. So detail that absolutely floored me about this is that her own pre-written script was actually sent to other networks as the script and read verbatim.
What?
A staffer sent it out as is when it was confirmed that she had died, and they sent her own statement about her death to be read verbatim by other anchors. And it was. Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't either. I don't know that there's a way to feel about that. On some level, I'm like, it was her words.
Yeah.
I mean, is that sort of what she wanted? But on the other hand, it feels very disturbing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do with that what you will. The speculation about her reasons for what she did was understandably intense. A theory emerged very quickly. I mean, literally before she was gone with the statement her mom gave, that her lack of success in relationships was pretty much what did it. And that seems to have been a factor, but I think that reducing Christine in her life to that is very reductive. So a lot of people found her mom's behavior very odd. She seemed kind of cold about the event and very social and calm around representatives from the media. And because even before comment sections, humans could not fucking help themselves, people started publicly speculating that Peg's personality was the reason Chris did what she did.
Oh, that's fucking disgusting.
Shut the fuck up. Yes, it is. Wow. It's really not even appropriate to speculate that now. But while you are in a community the same week that this happened, the same community that woman lives in, shut the fuck up.
That's disgusting.
I don't know what her relationship with her mother, how that may or may not have affected this at all. But there's a time and a place to shut up, and that was it. And people sure didn't. So, Peg gave a statement then, and she said, "I know what people are saying, but we're very private people. We grieve privately. Chris threw us into a public position. She knew we could handle our sorrow, but we refused to wear our hearts on our sleeves. Those who think I haven't cried should see my swollen tear ducts." A memorial service was held on the beach later that week, which was well attended. The minister said in her eulogy, "We suffer at our sense of loss. We are frightened by her rage. We are guilty in the face of her rejection. We are hurt by her choice of isolation, and we are confused by her message." Her brother Tim said, "She's gone. It was a foregone conclusion. There is very little more we can say. We plan to spend the rest of the day together at home." Christine's ashes were scattered in the Gulf of Mexico. So the station briefly replaced the Suncoast Digest with reruns of Gentle Ben, but then her morning segment returned unaltered with two successors who were also young single women.
Isn't that the her bear boss? Movie? Sorry.
I don't know.
Isn't it?
I don't know. I didn't look that up, actually.
I'm going to have to look it up. I'm sorry. It's going to...
You're fine.
I think my brain right now is just like, this is so heavy. Oh, is it a bear? It's like a dog with like, squirrel, okay. Squirrel. Okay.
Okay. Very brief sidebar. I was just thinking about this the other night while you're looking up Gentle Ben. Have you ever thought about how much of advertising on TV is shit-based? It's diapers... talking about shit. It's the Charmin bear showing off his asshole, which makes me angry every single time. It's poop yogurt talking about how it's going to make you poop. Why is there so much poop in commercials?
I don't know. It speaks to me.
I'm sick of it. It does not speak to me. The Charmin Bear in particular enrages me. And we all go, might as well enjoy the go. Oh.
You don't like when they shake their little butts?
I am physically clenching my fist right now. This is not a joke. No, I hate them. Okay.
Yes.
Anyway, what'd you find about Gentle Ben?
Well, Gentle Ben is the bear show.
Does he look like the Charmin Bear?
No, they use real fucking bears. I bet there's a disaster in this.
There's probably a story in that. You know what we could have done and should have done, and if I could start the podcast all over, I would. Start with the first episode and then, like, find some loose connection to another one and then do that, like, word association forever.
Yes, that would be cool.
Right? It would have. Anyway.
Oh, yes. Okay, some of these bears were a little feisty.
I'm not surprised.
They were declawed and most had their teeth removed.
Okay, you're about to make me put a whole new content warning in this episode for a sidebar.
Of course he's gentle. We just took everything away from him and handed him some toilet paper.
Okay, really? Okay, sorry. Now that's going to make me be nicer to the Charmin Bears than I don't want to be.
All right. Thank you for my sidebar. I needed that break.
You're welcome. I hope you did, because you're going to want to punch a hole in a wall next.
Oh, gosh.
Which I did send you this before.
Yeah.
But now that it's going to hit different now that you've heard the story. So Mike, her boss, after having 3 years to reflect on the matter, 3 years, because I am even going to extend Mike some grace here, and I'm going to say that the week after this happened, maybe he would be too defensive about his role in things to have any meaningful reflection.
Right.
I get that. I do. Like, even if you did a bad thing or contributed to it, which he didn't do this, but he probably didn't really help. Even if you did that, you're probably not going to be in a place to be doing personal growth right after it happens. That's not how humans work. I get it.
Let alone make statements. Yeah.
However, fucking Mike had 3 years to think about what to say about his role in Christine's death.
That's a long time.
It is. I would even give him a year to have his head up his ass. But he'd spent 3 years sleeping with this information every night. And what he had to say was, that incident didn't happen because of our editorial policy. We'd just been through a particularly violent week with a kidnapping and a hostage situation, a shootout between some cops and someone else, and these had bumped a couple of her feature stories. But the crux of the situation is that she's a 29-year-old girl who wanted to be married and wasn't.
Oh.
I thought I hated Captain Scatino. Ooh. How dare you?
Oh, it's so nasty.
3 years, Melanie.
It's because she wanted to be married.
So, we'll come back to Mike in a moment. Christine was posthumously nominated for a Forestry and Conservation Recognition Award by the Florida Division of Forestry for her conservation efforts.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. One of the men who worked for the department was scheduled to be on the Suncoast Digest the day that Christine died, but his son had been born that day, so he had to cancel. One of the worst things about this story for me is that for Mike, Christine's death kind of served the purpose that Christine's sarcastic comment about blood and guts, which referenced ratings. Her ongoing beef, it worked for him. Yeah. Susie Quinn wrote, Chris's suicide put station WXL-TV on the map. Nelson proudly showed his collections of clippings about it to a visitor. We got the whole front page of the Daily News, he boasted.
What?
Mm-hmm. She went on.
He's
on
like the showing night, the...
Uh-huh. On the Friday night before Chris killed herself, she had a terrible fight with Mike Simmons, the news director, about her story being cut in favor of a shootout. She was very emotional, would get unusually upset about these things, said Simmons. She would, well, throw tantrums a lot. End quote. Mike's thoughts about Christine's legacy? were. I think it was a last cry for recognition to all the people she'd helped, reached out to, and who hadn't reached back. She was saying, I was here, not just Sarasota, but I was here, world. If you do it on TV, nobody's ever done it before. And Chris, being the professional newswoman that she was, always wanted us to have the story first. We weren't even on the map before this happened. Now they know we're here. Perhaps it was her way of trying to help us along. End quote.
No.
Yes.
No.
Uh-huh. He said that out loud. Those thoughts you went from his brain to his mouth. Thoughts. And I know, but if somehow you do, keep it in fucking drafts. What the fuck? I think that is the most disgusting statement I've heard since we started this.
What? I'm
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, that one takes a while to absorb. So in the late 90s, this is more gross stuff, there was a resurgence of interest in her death when the citizens of the brand new internet proved to have a bottomless appetite for videos of people dying violently. There are websites whose purpose is obtaining gory and hard-to-find video and publishing it there. The viewers are sometimes called death hags, and the death hags have tried very, 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 very hard to find a video of Christine's death, and they have never been able to.
Good.
Yes. I do think that the fact that she meant for people to see it has led to a higher level than normal tolerance for this kind of behavior, because they feel justified because she did it so publicly, but stop for her family if nobody else. Jesus Christ. Owner of the Lost Media Wiki said, it's very much seen as a holy grail. So, far as I know, this has not happened yet, but someone in one of that forum's communities had floated the idea of pooling money to reach out to Greg, Christine's brother, to offer to pay him for a copy of it.
Uh-uh.
I don't know if they actually made contact with him or if that was just an idea. To be clear, as someone who could in any way, shape, or form be considered some weird branch of the media, cannot condemn that behavior strongly enough. That it never, ever, ever do some shit like that. I mean, I get the curiosity. I even get looking at it if it's readily findable.
Right.
But I never will, and I never want to understand. Like,
let's if you're saying, okay, the video is out in the world. Trauma.
Yes. If you're saying this is out in the world for my own morbid reasons, I would like to see it. It's not hurting the family more for you to have viewed it. Sure. And there's probably other ethical concerns, but I'll grant that much for sure. But to even for a second in your brain think maybe I should make contact with the immediate family and offer to pay them to see their sister die. I can't with people. I don't know what is wrong with people.
No.
So, one of the death hags wrote, can't wait till my eyes meet hers. The footage is coming. Another wrote, my heart skips a beat every time this thread comes up. And another wrote, I would have let Christine Chubbuck write it. And I want to know how these people function in society. It is such a sidebar.
I mean, they don't, Brianne.
If they pass an accident scene and they see a body covered up with a sheet, do they jump off and rip it off in front of their crying family? Because it's the same thing.
But there's a layer of protection and privacy that they're obviously not giving anyone else by being behind a computer screen. It's a whole another level of audacity, mm-hmm. you know, and entitlement, mm-hmm. sick entitlement.
It is. They should be ashamed of themselves.
They're going to go to Hades in a handbasket, if you ask me.
So yet another surge of interest in the tape happened when two different movies about Christine coincidentally aired at Sundance, both in 2016. And Vulture did a piece on Christine and reached out to the owner of the shop's widow, Molly Nelson, to ask about the existence of a tape. She responded, and for the first time, the tape's continued existence in the world was confirmed. Molly confirmed that her husband had held onto the original tape. And after the documentaries were released, she got a lot of calls from people about it, and she was uncomfortable.
Well, yeah.
She was afraid for her safety due to the intensity of the people who were seeking this video. So she explained to Vulture that she turned the tape over to what she referred to as a very large law firm, and that it would never be made public.
Good for her. Yes. Somebody with some fucking sense, finally.
Yes. So, in fact, Molly hates the tape. She wishes it wasn't even the thing. She wishes she were not at Steward, but she is keeping it to honor her late husband's wishes. The station's weatherman at the time of Christine's death says Molly would like to throw it in the bay, but he talked her out of that, saying, don't do that. Give it to museum or Columbia School of Journalism or something for safekeeping, because it is history as unfortunate as the history is, which I don't disagree with that necessarily.
I mean, I wonder, this is just pure weird curiosity on my part, but that stuff deteriorates, if not.
Yeah, it does. I don't know if they're doing any updating of it. I didn't find anything about that. I don't know its exact whereabouts, but it seems like Molly gave it to somewhere that would keep it private, as it should be. Home VCRs capable of recording live broadcasts did exist at the time, but they were uncommon and very expensive. And the Suncoast Digest probably wouldn't have been a top candidate for recording in the first place, so it is not likely that anyone at home recorded Christine's death. If they did, they have never come forward. As of 2021, there's a YouTuber who seems to possibly own an audio recording of it, and that is believed to be legitimate. And her brother, Greg, says that to this day, he is not personally aware of the studio tape's location, but that, quote, no one ever will have it if I have anything to say about it. And I truly hope that nobody does.
Well, there you go. Death Hags, there's your answer. No there's amount your answer. Of money.
Let it go. So, yeah, that's our story. I'm sorry. This story
really well covered, but I hated every second of
so
that.
So far under my skin.
That was a tough one.
That's gonna stick with me for a long time, forever. So I think we need disaster relief more than ever.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
So we've got an extra several scoops of disaster relief today.
Thank you, Horrible Ghouls. We really needed this one.
We did. I don't want to cop out on that whole big two-part episode and not really commenting on it myself. I also don't want to do a huge PSA where I'm like, and this is what you do to protect your mental health. Like, I'm the fucking mental health authority. I'm not.
Right.
I'm a weird, messed up person too. So I don't really want to speak in such generalities that it's useless. And I don't really want to say, if you're having a hard time, reach out for help and try yoga. So what I am going to do is I'm going to reiterate something we've talked about many times. Which is the most effective mental health intervention I have personally ever come up with for myself, which is the list that we've talked about.
Yeah.
I wanted something like a gratitude practice, but gratitude practices don't really resonate for me because then I feel like an ungrateful child, like on a really bad day where everything just sucks. And it feels like an obligation rather than a thing that I'm doing for myself. So I started looking at it as like an archiving, a cataloging project to alphabetically list everything that I come across that I am glad to share a planet with. And looking at life in such a way, I mean, that's not gonna fix depression by any means, but I do feel like it's had a measurable impact for me. And reading over the list is probably the only works every time thing that I've ever found. Because honestly, regardless of whether whatever is freaking me out at the moment comes to pass, and regardless of my health, mental, physical, any of it, regardless of even my finances, quite a lot of the things in the list, literally all I have to do to encounter them again is keep existing. And that is actually extremely useful to me. So I don't know. I don't want to have a bunch of generalities about mental health, but I've had my own stuff that I've dealt with. A lot of trauma, so much trauma, and a long time working on that. So I just wanted to talk again about the thing that has pulled me out of some dark fucking places a few times.
I love that so much.
Do you want to read our first listener one?
Sure. So the first one's from Annie. It says, "Hi, Brianne and Melanie. I'm a longtime listener from Ohio. I love this weird state, but the slander is valid." Thank you, Annie.
They rarely deny it.
Rarely. I did, not to interrupt you, Annie. Annie, are you okay? I did see we recently got a 4-star review, and it said Ohio is for lovers, would have gotten 5 if you didn't hate on Ohio so much, something like that.
Oh, my God. That's fine. You can keep your star. That's fair. Oh, God. Okay.
So Annie goes on to say, "Thank you so much for covering Christine this week. I'm trying to keep this light, but please know that it means a lot to me to hear others empathizing with those who have struggled with SI and mental illness. Thank you for your compassion, and please take some extra time this week to touch grass, be with your loved ones, and do something that sparks joy for yourself. My disaster relief is that I'm getting back into strength training and ecstatic dance." What's ecstatic dance?
I have heard of it, but I don't know enough to answer that. But I have heard of it. It does look very cool.
"I struggled with hypermobility for the better part of a decade before realizing that my symptoms only ramped up after I started birth control." It'll do it. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
"It turns out that estrogen and progestogen can exacerbate symptoms." Exasperate. Right?
Exacerbate, even.
Fuck. Exacerbate.
They don't know the tongue twister to pronounce progestogen. We just paused.
That's what it is.
That is what it is. We just did a whole Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers on a pause. Okay, back to it.
Annie did this on purpose.
Thanks a lot, Annie. I mean, it did make me laugh.
It made me smile, too. It's a good disaster relief. "So while I'm sad that I had to break up with my birth control, it's been nice to have joints that work more reliably. And so much fun to lift weights with friends and dance without throwing out my back. I'm 27 and have always been an old woman at heart. But wow, it is so nice not to be one physically, too." I'm telling you. I feel that. I wish I felt 27. Shut up, Brianne. Brianne! Annie's gonna hate me. Don't hate me.
Annie's gonna hate me.
"Also, if you like dancing but hate being creeped on, check out your local area to see if you have an ecstatic dance group. It's a 2-ish hour session of free form, no judgment dancing that is big on consent and dancing sober. It's been a huge help for my mental health." Ooh, I like that.
That sounds lovely.
"Thank you for all you do, Annie."
Interesting.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah.
Show off my dance moves.
Please do.
I'm the worst dancer.
I'm worse, I promise. Stephanie, "Wholesome eclipse content. My partner and I drove to Paoli, Indiana to be in the path of totality for the eclipse. We saw the last one in totality too. It's been convenient to live in Kentucky for both of them.
Go Big Blue!
The last one we saw was in a Dollar General parking lot in Nortonville, Kentucky, and this time we just parked at the local Walmart along with a bunch of others. I kind of wish I'd picked somewhere more picturesque, but the Walmart lot was interesting. It was a real slice of mid-America. All kinds of people just chilling, looking at the sky. Astronomy has always been a fixation of mine ever since I was a kid, so I felt these eclipses were so important to be able to see. It was breathtaking and shut me up for a few minutes, which is hard to do." It didn't shut me up for any minutes. "It really was beautiful. Also, all the Walmart employees came out to watch too, and at one point it was so quiet that you could hear the music coming from the Walmart, Love Shack by the B-52s. It was a pretty neat experience. We left our house here in Louisville at 1 p.m., and we got back home again at 5:30 p.m., so it was a perfect day trip.
Oh, I love that too. I love the Love Shack reference. Someone burnt that down. Still upsetting. I never got to go see it.
Okay. I would also like to point out that we were in Totality here, and we had a listener, Stephanie, who was coming to see Totality, and she stopped to visit me. So I'd like to remind you guys that if the moon does any more cool shit in Indiana, you can visit me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We like meeting people.
Mm-hmm. I've liked every ghoul I've met so far.
So the next one's from Terry. It says, Eclipse disaster relief from my potentially future chaotic man, 4-year-old. Yes, a girl can dream, right? While he thought the eclipse was, quote, beautiful and cool, he seemed rather disappointed that the sun and the moon didn't crash into each other.
I think that's fair.
Yes.
I do. I mean, especially for a 4-year-old, can you imagine the dream of hoping that that's what was going to happen? And also, I don't think you have to dream about raising a chaotic man. I think you're living the dream.
Yes.
Yeah. Serena says, in 2017, I was not doing well. I was in my senior year of college and had just been diagnosed with major depressive disorder for the first time. I promise this is going to be disaster relief, even though it sounds bad right now, LOL. Serena, nature of the game, baby.
Nature of the game.
So I was on meds and I was doing okay, but I still felt emotionally detached from my responsibilities. So when the solar eclipse happened in August of that year, I had just started seeing a new guy. I'm talking we'd only been on 2 dates. And he asked me if I wanted to go see the solar eclipse down in Kentucky with him. Now, I lived in Cleveland then, so that was about a 7.5-hour drive. And also, it fell on the first day of my senior year of college, but I went anyway because I had kind of a fuck-everything mindset at that time. In hindsight, it could have gone very poorly. I barely knew this guy, and he was from the internet, Tinder, so he could have been anyone, but I decided it was fine, and if I drove my car, then I could leave the situation and not be stuck, so I went. We did indeed drive about 7.5 hours for a 3-minute event, but I had such a nice time. We shared music and anecdotes about our lives, and honestly, looking back, this road trip is when I fell in love with him.
Oh!
I love stories like this. But it feels kind of insane because I had barely known him for 3 weeks. Anyway, fast forward to 2024, and I'm living in Philadelphia. Now I live with that same guy, except now we are engaged.
Oh, congratulations! That's amazing!
We have a beautiful life together, and we drove again 7 hours back to Cleveland to see the solar eclipse in totality. Oh my god. We used it as a date and time to reflect on how far we've come in the last 7 years. We were getting married in September, and I couldn't be happier that I decided that this random man was trustworthy, and that I wanted to go see a once-in-a-lifetime event with him, because now I guess that once-in-a-lifetime is my whole life, I guess. He's been so supportive and patient with me on my health journey, both mental health and chronic illness. He's also supported me through grad school, and he continues to support and encourage me and show me how loved I am constantly. And that's a wholesome solar eclipse story for you.
Okay. Oh, I love
that. That was everything.
That was everything. You know how they have, I've seen ads for them. One of my friends actually purchased one of these. The moon where you put the they have like the sky and the moon and stuff. You put in like a special mm-hmm. date.
Yeah.
They need one of those for the first eclipse. They should get that printed out.
They should. Oh, that's cool.
You need new wall art. I love that so much.
I love that story so much.
Y'all are making me homesick with all these Kentucky stories. Next one's from Lex. It says, I saw a whale shark in real life for the first time. It's my favorite sea animal. I cried.
That's beautiful.
Perfect.
And I am so happy for you, Lex.
Yes.
I really am.
Lex deserves the world. We love Lex.
We do. Michelle went to Red Rocks in Colorado at the beginning of April with one of my besties who got us 4th row seats to see an amazing DJ, Dom Dalla. The weather was perfect, the crowd was awesome, the set was amazing, and the amphitheater was so cool. I was relaxed for the first time in many, many months of stress with my dad having emergency surgery and recovering in the hospital. I danced, I sang, I looked silly, and I was so thankful for everything in my life.
Oh,
good.
Nothing beats a good dance.
Nothing. Apparently, it's the theme.
Next one's from Kit. Says, my small and I are chronic gamers. They are 11. Board games, video games, role play games, we love it all. However, we've hit the age where pranking has started. And my gosh, this child can be a ninja when they want to be. They will wait till I'm playing something very intense, creep up behind me, and just touch the back of my neck, then disappear out the door.
Oh, no.
Once they did this while I was playing D&D online, and I was on camera. And I don't know how, but everyone was in on it. And the first time they did it, I flew off my chair. Cue much laughter from everyone else in the call. And my wonder small curled up on the floor crying in laughter. I love my small so much. They always brighten my day up. It's just the two of us, and I am disabled. They've been my young carer since the age of 5 and never complains, except for washing up, but everyone hates doing the dishes. Feel that. They've been nominated for a Young Carer Award of Achievement this year.
Wow.
So proud. Also, thanks to you guys, we always say sweet dreams or no dreams before bed. Oh, I love that. This Me is too. The same child from the leaky story you read out a few years ago. I remember that.
I do too. And I also love that because sweet dreams or no dreams is 100% you, but I also say it to Adelaide every night now.
Yeah, it sticks. I like the name Small.
That's very cute. So I've got Caitlin, who says, Brianne and Melanie, I've been a horse person for as long as I could remember. I'd like to think that means she's a centaur, but she's probably not.
She's not a centaur, Brianne.
I took formal lessons for 5 years and rode for a total of 10 years.
It would be cool if she was a centaur, though.
Right?
I mean,
that'd be my disaster relief.
Listen, if people can still believe in unicorns and mermaids, I mean, there's an argument that Caitlin is a centaur.
Okay, but it's looking unlikely because it does say she was thrown off of a horse, and they probably wouldn't do a centaur like that.
Unless it was a magic trick, and she was thrown. There was like a big box, and she was cut in half by a magician, and the horse part through, and Caitlin went the other way.
That could be canon for you.
It's my canon.
Thrown off a horse and dragged, which messed my back up pretty bad. I had 2 compressed discs in my lower back, 3 in my neck that caused nerve damage on my right side, as well as a variety of cuts, scrapes, and a black eye from a rock hitting me in the face. This is not about my accident, though. Fast forward to 2011. I was the first person to graduate college in my family, so of course I had to do something big to celebrate. My parents booked a travel package for me to go to the Kentucky Derby. The week would include various horse industry-related events, like visiting a farm for retired racehorses, going to the Kentucky Horse Park, and visiting some of the farms in the area for tours. I bought the big Kentucky Derby hat, like all the ladies wear, and had to ship it FedEx overnight to my hotel with an extra $5,000 insurance policy on it, in case of loss or damage. This was also the first big trip by myself flying, checking into a hotel, everything. I was so scared but so excited at the same time. My flight connected in Charlotte to go to Lexington, Kentucky. However, my flight into Charlotte was delayed. After delays on delays, my flight was canceled, and I had to spend the night in the airport since I was not old enough to get a hotel room for myself yet.
Oh, no.
The next morning, I had a 6 a.m. flight to Lexington, and when I got to the hotel, I found out they gave my room away despite me calling the hotel as well as the tour director to let them know and was told that my room would be held for me. Lo and behold, it was not. They gave me access to the club lounge to wait for a room. And there were drinks and snacks and a huge bathroom to freshen up and a bunch of couches to chill out on. I freshened up and had something to eat and then promptly fell asleep for like 2 hours. When I woke up, the manager was in the lounge setting up some lunch snacks and got a message on her radio to put the news on. To my shock, President Obama was on and it was breaking news. I was on a plane in the air when Bin Laden was killed. I damn near shit myself when I heard the news. After that, my room and my tour director came knocking to give me the swag and passes I needed for the week and to touch base on the hotel debacle. I went on to have an absolutely incredible time, big derby hat and all. And no, we did not have to claim the $5,000 on our insurance policy for the hat. It got FedExed round trip and survived.
Wow, FedEx actually.
That's cool.
There was a lot of good stuff in there.
There's some disaster relief right there.
Derby's coming up so fast.
When is it?
It's the first Saturday in May.
Oh, wow. That is fast.
Yeah. Okay. I love me some derbies. Wow. So the next one is from Julie. It says, my husband celebrated his first, quote, birthday post-stem cell transplant.
Yay.
That's amazing. He's come so far, and we are so, so lucky and blessed. I was stronger than I thought I could be, and it seems like if we got through this, we can get through anything now.
Hell yeah.
You know, I mean, that there really is something to that when you're in close relationships and partnerships, like, it's just not one person going through it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. It's heavy. Awesome, Julie.
Well, that's great news. I have Melissa. My husband celebrated his birthday in March, going on over a year and a half of sobriety. Hell yes. Second birthday, he has not had a drink, and first time camping completely sober. Despite temptations being thrown at him because people can suck, he came out the winner. He's become a whole new person, and it was like a caterpillar finally finding their wings.
Oh.
I love that, and I love how proud of him you are, and the public acknowledgement. That's beautiful.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
Next one's from Sarah. It says, they're both a disaster and disaster relief. Major League Baseball switched uniform suppliers, and the new ones are, all caps, garbage. The pants are see-through. Go Google it if you don't believe me. But we now know that one of the Cardinals pitchers prefers tidy whities after he pitched in the rain.
Oh.
Is he pitching more than one thing? They bust easily, and they overall don't fit well. It is both hilarious and concerning.
Oh, that sounds like both. Yeah. I will Google that, though. Anne says, my disaster relief is the Spam Museum in Austin, Minnesota. Perfect for the week. I was there when I was a sophomore in high school, and we were coming home from a mission trip with my youth group, but I remember it being much smaller. It moved to its new location in 2016. It has exhibits with the cultural significance of Spam around the world, a conveyor belt of cans that spans the building, Spam's involvement in World War II, Spam-a-Lot, a musical I was in, a play place for littles, Spamples, we tried maple bacon, and a gift shop. Did I mention it's completely free to visit this museum? I am including a photo of facts about Spam in Hawaii, and also one of me.
Oh, we'll link that. We'll link that in the show notes. Thank you, guys. Everyone that sent in their disaster reliefs. Yes, take care of yourself.
Thank you so much.
And until next time, sweet dreams or no dreams.
Sweet dreams or no dreams.
Hey, horrible ghouls! Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you would like to share your personal MarkSafe moment, you can send it to us at MarkSafePodcast@gmail.com. Please give our podcast a rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your buddies about us too. That goes a long way. If you want to further elevate your support, check out our MarkSafe Patreon page, where we have shoutouts, goodies, and some bonus content in the works. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks again, and as always, stay safe.